You. Now, where have we been? We hear you cry. Why have we been so fabulously mysterious? Well, it's been over a year since we did our last stunning podcast with the luscious William Lee Adams, a.k.a. Wee Wee Blogs. We love you, William.
Love you.
Love you. Say it. Stop drinking that Prosecco. Okay. So Eurovision over the years has given us nothing more than joy, endless pleasure and happiness, but that wasn't the same in 2024. And as the season progressed, it was like a tumour slowly growing inside the fan zone, and there was a lot of toxicity, as you know, and negativity about the contest. And we decided very early on not to be a part of it. And in hindsight, I'm proud that we decided to take a step back and watch the chaos unfold. For EuroBliss, it was the right decision. And dead proud of that. Because the whole point of our little show was to have a little giggle, and there wasn't much to laugh about this year, and we all felt a bit emotionally disconnected from it, which we'll touch a bit later. But on the back of that, the chosen subject of tonight's show is Room 101. Now, what the figgy pudding is Room 101?
Room 101 is a reference to George Orwell's 1984 dystopian novel about a future state which tramples on the rights of individuals.
Oh, any good? Did you know that?
No, I didn't know, actually.
Oh, so I'm glad you're here then, isn't it?
You learn something new every day.
A space to put all your crap never to be seen or heard of again, yeah? So each of us have picked four things or four songs that make us squirm and retch about the Eurovision Song Contest, and we're going to try and convince the other two of their inclusion in Room 101, Eternal Abyss of Doom. So it's going to get a little bit bitchy, and I'm going to predict a fair amount of bloodshed. So, who wants to go first?
You got ladies' choice.
Well, go on, man.
I'm saying you choose because you're the host.
Okay, though, you go first then.
Okay, me go first.
Cheers, by the way.
Cheers. Welcome back.
Cheers, quiz.
Cheers, the queers. So my first choice would be Secret Combination by Kalomira, Greece 2008. And I chose this because it's my biggest ick. I chose my entries, basically I gave them like a category, and so there's a certain aspect of it that I don't like, right? So first of all, you can tell from space that this was written by a man. Now I don't know this, but I don't think most women would play with the line of sexuality and young girls in this way. I've always thought this song was a little bit dodgy and creepy, and time has not improved matters. But it plays with the Lolita thing in a very, like, subtle way. The track is so polished, and so is the performance, and the staging seems expensive to me. And it makes almost, you know, the Lolita vibe worse because it's sold in a very effective and slick vehicle, taking away the focus from what the song is actually saying. I find it a little bit insidious in that way. So especially the line, you know, can't you feel it that I'm not a little girl? And she is singing that as she's almost like babying her voice, infantilizing herself and walking around the stage doing little high squeaks like, you know, like she's surprised by everything going on around her. She's 23 at this point, but going on 16. We all know that when you're young, you think you're way more mature than you actually are. And in the lyrics, she is implying she wants to show you how much she has grown and how, you know, what a big girl she is. But in the song and in the performance, you're getting these signals that this is quite a young girl, actually. The song also implies that she can't communicate or speak for herself. It's up to you to, and the line goes, discover what goes on when I'm crying, what I want when I'm smiling. As if she was a non-verbal baby, goo goo gaga. Does she need a nappy change? Does she want to be burped? Who knows? She is such a mystery. If only there was a way to find out. You couldn't possibly ask her, of course. She couldn't possibly tell you. Instead, the song suggests you use your imagination to figure out what she wants, to decipher the mystery of her secret combination. So consensual, so not creepy. And remember that none of this is the artist actually saying this. None of this is female perspective. It's all written by grown-ass men who know very well what it's like to be young. And to me, it feels like the artist is there to enact a male fantasy. I'm not saying the men responsible for this are predators or anything, but 2008 was definitely a different time. I don't think this would fly today in the same way. And I think it gives me the ick, partly because it's so well executed and disguised, like a lot of toxic masculinity was in those days.
So we're going to play the song, and then Mark and I will debate with Juan whether we're going to put it into Room 101 or keep it alive.
And I quote, "Sometimes woman, sometimes baby, it's Calamira. And to unlock her, all you need is her secret combination."
That's the live version. So now it's up to me to decide whether we're going to agree with Juan and ditch the bitch, or whether we're going to keep it into the real world. What do you reckon?
Well, I've obviously had a little
Prosecco.
I've had a more than a clue as to Juan's four choices for this evening's show, and I have to say, this one absolutely stands out as a surefire candidate for the guillotine. I'm a bit lazy, I have to admit. I had not really listened to the words and got this whole Lolita angle. I'm grateful to be educated, because it makes it even more horrendous than it is. My objection is a simple one. It's so bloody repetitive. That annoying chorus comes, I counted against 12 times she sings that in 3 minutes. It's unbearable. And this also will pick up in a theme I'll pursue with one or two other choices later on. But actually, 2008 wasn't a great year. I think we can all agree on that.
I like it.
Yeah, the winner wasn't great either.
No, the winner wasn't great.
No. But it's the fact that a song like this that came third kept out so many other really good songs. I mean, I think of Serbia that year, I think of Portugal, and there are others. This is Greece's second most successful ever Eurovision song. I mean, hello?
That's outrageous.
It's outrageous. Anyway, you obviously agree with me.
Of course I do, I do, I do. The thing with this is, I think her secret combination is the fact that she's actually not bad, you know, but she's also annoying in equal doses, and that combination is very,
it's a
very
secret combination.
It's a very great skill to have, mm-hmm. and I can't bear it. She, like you, it's very Britney, and it's too Britney, it's too squeaky, it's too schoolgirly, and I'm happy to bin it. It's not Greece's finest moment at all.
But the lyrics are, you know, the secret combination thing. It's like she's saying no, but you have to find her secret combination, and then she'll say yes. It's my biggest ick, definitely. Ick, to be clear.
It's not a Me Too song, is it?
No, not really, no.
So, in the bin then! Right, do you want to go next?
So, let's go back in time to 1968, when the young Mark Dowd was only 8 years old and he was watching his second ever Eurovision. And that year, for the UK, Cliff Richard entered with congratulations and very proudly. I'd sent off a postcard to the BBC because in the Song for Europe, we had all six songs being played for us week by week. And I fell in love with congratulations. I was an 8-year-old boy. I loved Cliff. And I sent off my postcard. And to mention my delight, when it won with 169,000 votes or something or other, I remember it being announced. And so the first Eurovision in colour, 1968, and there was Cliff waiting to win on home soil at the Royal Albert Hall in that rather ridiculous blue suit of his with his big fluffy shirt, and he was pipped at the post. He got 28 votes. Seems very strange that the song could come second with 28 votes, doesn't it now? And was pipped by Spain's Martial singing La La La. And this is a song that my friends know carries a big historical personal moment for me, because many years later, when I was having a frank chat with my mum, I said, "Mum, when did you first realise, you know, I was a bit different?"
She said, "Puffed her."
"You puffed her. You mean gay, love?"
Yeah.
I said, "Yeah." She said, "Oh, that's easy. 1968, you cried all night when Cliff lost Eurovision." But I didn't say anything to your dad. And so this is a sort of trauma song for me. And to be honest, I don't mind the verse bit of La La La. It's in minor key and quite... But the annoying chorus makes my secret combinations chorus look positively original and wonderful. So I hate it. And I want it in Room 101.
Introduce it then.
My first choice for Room 101 this evening is Marcial from Spain singing La La La.
Yo canto a la mañana que ve mi juventud y al sol que día a día nos trae nueva inquietud. Cantan cuando naces y también en el adiós. La 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 la. Thank you. canto a la tierra que me ha visto crecer. Y canto al día en que sentí el amor. Andando por la vida aprendí esta canción.
Okay, so, Now, the thing is, you're pissed off with this song because it beat Cliff Richard. Now, if this song had come second, I don't think we'd be playing it right now, yeah? But I like the backstory here. I like the fact that the original version, which was sung by the very handsome Juan Manuel Serrat with an amazing voice...
Sorry, that was not the original version.
That he sang the original version.
No, he did not. So, okay, let's...
it's all breaking out
yeah,
here.
Yeah. So actually, there was like a competition originally to decide which song would represent Spain in London, right? So they had three songs to choose from. You had La La La, which was sung by a group, actually. I can't remember who it was. And then Juan Manuel Serrat had another song. So the thing is, the jury loved La La La, but they also loved Juan Manuel Serrat. So they wanted... to combine those things. The thing is that Juan Manuel Serrat was from Catalonia, and Catalonia, that language had been repressed for a long time under Franco, and suddenly it was allowed. So he wanted to celebrate that and say, like, I have to sing this in Catalan. And the TVE said that, no, you can't do that. That's too political, right? Which, you know, sounds familiar today, kind of. So instead they chose Maciel. So from that part, I really have a problem with this song. It echoes like fascism.
they put it through the Castellano machine.
Exactly. But it was Castellano from the beginning, right? They just blocked Juan Manuel from doing it in Catalan. However, like, I cannot sit here and pretend after listening, especially after listening to Secret Combination, that this is a bad composition and that she sings it badly. I do agree that the chorus is banal, repetitive, and it's not one of my favorites at all. I can't say I hate it, though, especially like the verses are so nice. She sings it really well. It's a lovely arrangement. Like, I would say it's a very mid song. I can't hate it, though.
Yeah, well, I was going to say on the back of that the Serrat version is a bit more easy listening. The verses kind of blend into the choruses a bit smoother. The Maciel version was rearranged to suit her voice because she's a bit younger and more poppy. And so you've got more contrast between the verses and the chorus. It's a bit more obvious. And because the song was sped up, if the fact that there's so many la's in the song is something that you have an issue with, it gives her the opportunity to sing the chorus again, an extra chorus of la's before the end of the 3 minutes. Interestingly, the English lyrics of La 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 is He Gives Me Love. And having listened to the English version last night, A, it's shit, and B, there's only 30 la's in that. So I actually sat
only
there and counted. I mean, it goes, I wake up every morning and my darling looks at me and goes, la, 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 la. If I woke up in the morning and my darling looks at me and did that, I'd get him sectioned. And if you're going to punish your song for having lots of la's in it, it isn't the only Eurovision song with lots of la's in
exactly.
It. There's a lot of la's littered in a lot of la songs. So,
but not many of them won.
That's the thing. It's the winner. Yeah.
Yeah. If you win, you're putting yourself out there to be examined. You're under the spotlight. Historically, you go back and say, you know, is anybody defending Estonia 2001?
No.
But if we're punishing winners, this would not be atop my list. I mean, Azerbaijan 2011.
Wait for my later choices. I don't think you want to put it in Room 101, though, do you?
Well, I was going to say also that the La 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 might be a trite, banal title. Now, maybe it was then. But it was the first Eurovision song with La 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 in the title. So at that time, it was quite original, even though we laugh at it now. So on that basis, and I do like the song, then I can't put it into Room 101. I do apologise, but you are still a very, very good friend of mine.
It'll always be my room 101, and my room 101's bigger than yours.
Ow!
So I'm going to agree there. I don't actually like the song as much as Andy, but I can't hate it enough to put it in room 101 because it does have too many redeeming qualities.
Your turn.
Right then.
I'm sorry.
Right, my turn.
Woo!
Okay, I mean, the longer Eurovision goes on and the more countries involved, the happier I am. But if you are going to take part, at least try and make a decent contribution. Yes, of course, chaps, I'm talking about you, San Marino. Why on earth are you in Eurovision, please? Okay, so San Marino is the fifth smallest country in the world. It's 23 metres... Sorry.
I mean, it might as well
be. It's not that big.
23 square miles in area. In the great scheme of things, basically, it's a street in Italy. And on that street, no one lives who can write a song, sing a song, unless you call Valentino Minetta, and also no one who watches Eurovision or who has a phone to register a Eurovision vote. Because, of course, a San Marinese vote, phone vote, is made up of a jury average of five random countries chosen by the producers. Now, have you ever met anybody from San Marino?
Of course not.
No.
Have you had sex with anyone from San Marino? I know you've tried.
No, I've never.
No, you haven't, have you? As far as I'm concerned, the enclaved microstate, contributes absolutely nothing to Eurovision. Now, I'm a bit old-fashioned and old-school. I want songs to sound like they come from that country. So, for example, I want the Greek song to sound Greek, to be sung by Greek people, blah, 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 blah. San Marino has absolutely zero musical identity. They've entered 14 times. They made it to the final three times. Their best resource is 19th with Sir Hat, who is absolutely not from San Marino. And as far as Room 101 goes, I could put any of those songs in the bin. But I detest this next one. Particularly, it scored 1 point, lost its semi-final splendidly in 2017. It's absolutely rubbish. But I don't want to be accused of being biased, so I'm going to introduce it as the very wonderful and talented aforementioned Valentina Minetta and her special American friend, Jimmy Wilson, and their fantastic disco anthem, The Spirit of the Night. And then you can argue with me why this should be put into the bin.
Are you the one I dream about?
Maybe I am.
I really feel the night can take away my doubt.
I'll try and do what I can.
Every time I see you smile, there is a sadness in your eyes.
But I've been hurt before.
I know it's nothing new, and time will make you realize.
let's have some alcohol quickly.
So what do we think of that, Mark?
I think it was beyond description. To be honest, I mean, my memory of the last 10 or 15 years is pretty good for most of the songs that competed in semi-finals and the final. I need a bit of help when we go earlier than 1980 or so, but that one I'd absolutely blanked out. So it was a bit of a horror to have my memory reawakened.
That's what I'm here for.
Well, but we're back to repetitive, certainly again. Dated, yeah, but just plastic. Just absolutely unrelentingly boring plastic.
That's so offensive to plastic.
No, it's offensive to plastic. So, yeah, this world is definitely going in. And you want it in, so it doesn't matter what Juan thinks, because that's 2-0 already.
So this is so shit. This is so awful. It sounds like someone like has made like a half shoddy job of producing a backing track for amateur theater musical. It's so awful. But you know, there is so much competent blandness in Eurovision. I actually like the chaotic shitstorm that San Marino sometimes bring. You just never know what they're going to do, and I just don't mind it. I love a bit of campy kitsch rubbish.
The thing is, you know, like I'm backing myself up here, they have a very disproportionate 5-day long national final competition. Anyone can pay a fee to enter the competition. But whereas Luxembourg used to kidnap artists from, well, anywhere apart from Luxembourg and get good results and even win, San Marino do the exact opposite, choose badly and rarely qualify from the semi-finals.
And that's their charm.
That's
what I love.
Yeah, very good choice. Right, so it's one second choice?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, my second choice. Okay. Oh.
It can't be from San Marino.
Oh, okay, here we go. Like I said, I put my choices in categories, and this is my most disliked, but actually my most hated. This is Mia Dimcic from Croatia, yes. Guilty Pleasure. And I don't think I've ever had such a strong negative reaction to any other Eurovision entry. Perhaps it boils my blood because I feel like it's cynically plays to a toxic part of like traditional romanticism in this kind of cutesy way. Now, nobody's perfect, and there are so many interesting and constructive ways of portraying the struggles and complexities of a relationship. But lyrically and musically, this feels so insincere and banal, it borders on being dumb. I just feel stupid listening to it. The character here is escaping into a fantasy instead of communicating with her partner. You know, perhaps she needs therapy or even help. You know, maybe she is not okay. As a concept, I really like that twist for a different kind of love song. But in this entry, the situation is presented as something like romantic and sweet. This nonsense feels a bit like, you know, Love Actually, but for dummies. And in 3 minutes. Maybe I'm asking a lot for Eurovision, but I just cannot stand it.
Well, you've got my appetite now. Let's listen to it.
Mia Dimcic, Guilty Pleasure, my second choice.
Dreamt of you last night, woke up, you weren't there. 5 nights in a row of dreams I'd never share. You come without a warning, early in the morning. Timing's never been our thing. Leaving me with guilt, the only souvenir you bring. I'm with him and you're a secret treasure. He's devotion, you're a guilty pleasure. I'm with him and this is real life, honey. Guess the joke's no longer funny. I'm with him until the death do us part. But it doesn't do for this hungry heart. Head, you always come and say, would you run away? Would you run away with me? Would you run away? Would you run away? One love is enough, that's all you ever get. At least that's what they tell you, still I can't forget. Eyes like burning ashes, till the sun like flashes. Can't recall what I've been taught. Captivated by the thunderstorm in which I'm caught. I'm with him and you're a secret treasure. He's devotion, you're a guilt.
devotion, you're a guilty pleasure. I'm with him and this is real life, honey. Guess the joke's no longer funny. I'm with him until the death do us part, but it doesn't do for this hungry heart. I'm with him but in my frantic head you always come and say,
I had forgotten about that. So firstly, before I make a comment, I want to thank you for bringing it back into my life.
I'm so sorry.
You bastard. Chuck it in the bin, set it on fire. I mean, she stands there in this really creepy geometric salmon pink dress, pretending to play the guitar. And then she says, would you run away with me? And I'm thinking, oof, the audacity. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I'm in a minority of one here. I'm going to stand up for this poor, oppressed woman. This takes me back to 2022 when we did our preview programme. And even then, there was a chasm, a Grand Canyon of distance between Juan and myself on this. And it strikes me that that's got even bigger in the last 2 years. So it's not that I like this even more than I used to. I still think it's
and you hate it more than you used to.
You definitely hate it more. The hate has grown. There's no doubt about that.
I mean, it's solidified.
Yeah, it's solidified. Because, you know, yeah, yeah. I think you're overthinking it. And not that Eurobliss is renowned for obvious comments, but this is a guilty pleasure.
For who?
Me.
All of a sudden?
Leave her alone. I mean, it came 11th. It almost qualified. I hate to remind you of that. A lot of people out there voted for it and liked it.
Well, yeah, because that's what the point was. It's playing to this toxic part of romanticism that a lot of people just, like Love Actually, and people just give it a pass.
In Croatian, it sounds lovely. In English, not.
Had a very memorable melody, which was very easy to hum and have playing in your car when you're going along the windswept roads of Salford.
To be honest, when it's in Croatian, it suddenly gives her a personality. It's less like Taylor Swift, and you don't understand the lyrics, so it's suddenly like a pleasant nothing. But when you know what she's talking about, it just becomes awful.
Your first two songs have been targeted against very attractive women with dark hair wearing pink dresses. I'm beginning to wonder if there's a theme developing here.
So that's going in the bin, yeah?
Yep.
Right, darling, you're up again. Well, who's your second choice?
I have to turn to the United Kingdom.
I can't believe you would do that. I can't believe it.
It was just a matter of time.
It just wouldn't be fair if in the annals and horrors of the post-1998 track record of the United Kingdom, there wasn't at least one song to somehow be a lightning conductor for our national misery. And goodness, we were spoiled for choice. I mean, I sat there.
Exactly.
I was thinking, well, which of the following 15 songs should I go for? Electro Velvet. Ooh, Andy Abraham. Ooh, you know. But no, I looked no further than 2010 and a man called Josh Dubovy. Now, let me tell you about this. I did a little bit of research on this because, you know, is this guy still alive? Does he have a career? Did he survive Eurovision? Josh Dubovy was only 20 years old when he sang That Sounds Good to Me. And he only came to the attention of the BBC production team because he won Billy Ricky's Got Talent. Excuse me.
I honestly thought he was younger even.
Yeah, yeah. Now, this song, you know, which came last with 10 points, or was it 14? I've forgotten. I think it was 10. Anyway. Too many, yeah. I mean, firstly, the inanity of the lyrics. I mean, just listen to them. They are so goddamned awful. This is like the kind of song you saw on the Des O'Connor show or the Val Dunican show in 1972. But that's an insult to those shows, actually, because it's supremely dated.
You really are showing your age. Right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I know. But it's. But also, I know you've got things to say about the choreography, but the way they stage the song is just beyond awful. And I want you, dear listeners, to concentrate before we get Andy and Juan's reactions. I played this to my hubby the other day, and 2 minutes in, he said, oh, I think you're being horrible. He actually singing it quite well. I've heard of worse. Then I pointed him in the last 20 seconds to the last two attempts to bring the song to a climax. flat is not the word for it. It's just, you know, we could break cupboards full of water for crystal glass with that note. So I'm sorry. This, I think of all the candidates I've got for Room 101, this is my strongest.
It's like having an orgasm, then nothing comes out. Do you know what I mean?
Well, let's not get too personal.
It's not like having an orgasm in the slightest. Oh. This would be the worst orgasm in the world.
Introduce it.
This is the United Kingdom entry from 2010, sung by Josh Dubovy, very inappropriately called That Sounds Good to Me.
How do I begin to imagine all the happy faces I'd like to see? The final destination with sounds of celebration. If I could find the opportunity. So I wonder, who can I turn to? Who can make these wishes and dreams come true?
I suffer with this poor guy. You know, just imagine being Josh, a young person trying to get ahead of the music industry who perhaps felt like, you know, he didn't have the luxury of saying no. Now you've said yes too many times, and you are about to humiliate yourself in front of millions of people.
Millions.
Because you know this is absolutely shit. The song is absolutely shit. The staging is shit. And you also know that everybody else knows it. Imagine the nerves, the panic, the anxiety, like the pressure on your voice. I am surprised his voice held up as well as it did for as long as it did. Because, I mean, I would be vomiting. I would be like, my voice would be shaking. I wouldn't be able to sing.
That as a no then.
So, you know, but as he starts singing, the backing vocals are just all over the place. I imagine every second of that horrible performance felt like an eternity. And then, just to make matters worse, the last line that he repeats twice, he just misses it completely. And who wouldn't, like, in that situation, right? And then ta-da, that's the end. It is just the cherry on top of the shit cake that is this entire situation. The universe is just taking a huge, massive dump on him at this point. I hope he can look back at this and just laugh, because this is just such a spectacular crash in every way. It's a series of unfortunate events that led to a comedy of errors that just happened to star Josh Duhamel. And I don't think, you know, anyone believes this represents him, or, you know, that it's on him. This is just so comically unfortunate.
That sounds good to who? Me? Are you deaf? I mean, what's going on? I mean, it's so bad, it's funny, but not funny, it's sad funny. It's like, how dare you funny? Pete Waterman, the most successful composer of the 1980s in the UK, came back 20 years later with this pile of drivel. Now, I saw Josh Duhamel outside the Shadow Lounge in Soho just before the London preview party that year, and I shouted out to him really loudly, and he was there with his mum, "Josh, don't do it, run!" Obviously, he didn't hear me. Oh, come on. Yeah, it's in the bin completely.
It actually sounds so bad.
Here's
to
a general
everyone.
Knowledge question for both of you. Have a guess where this peaked in the UK charts. What number did it reach? The highest point?
I'm surprised it got into the charts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it got to number 187.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it did well, better than I thought.
Yeah.
See you, Josh. Right, my go now. So, Ireland. Ireland's fall from grace has been...
Sorry, you didn't mention this for me. Okay, whatever.
Did I not?
Nope. Or maybe I just missed it. Sorry. I think the Prosecco is starting to hit. So
you'll have to have a spontaneous reaction to it.
But yeah, fine. But that's easy.
Oh, don't worry, Juan. I can talk for you. I normally do. Oh, hush my mouth.
Are you okay? Are you sure I can talk now?
Yeah. Sorry, yes, let's go. Can you?
No, I can't.
That sounds good to me.
Ireland's fall from grace has been swift and painful. Once darlings of the show, rarely putting a foot wrong, and currently joint champions with 7 victories since the semi-finals were introduced in 2004, the Irish have suffered and have loved it. Their safe, jury-friendly ballads have got lost in a sea of more progressive and exciting sounds. They failed to qualify to the final 11 times and have finished last 4 times since 2004. So to represent these dark times, I want to toss their 2007 entry into bin. Coming last with just 5 points from a very dodgy Albanian jury in the final and giving the country its worst result is folk band Dervish and their extraordinary, beguiling, non-binary allegation, "They Can't Stop the Spring." Now, I don't want to say, are we going to play the live version?
It's up to you.
Let's play the live version. I mean, we need bad songs in Eurovision to make the good songs sound even better. But sometimes bad songs are so bad, they are massively entertaining. But this, to quote the late, great Daniel Gould, ploughs its own furrow in a field of sludge in the middle of nowhere. Her voice is woeful, the performance is sloppy, and the silly grandma arm-waving made it very amateurish, which is very strange because they're a very well-known and established band in Ireland. I don't think it would look out of place in the movie The Wicker Man. Have you seen that?
I love The Wicker Man.
One of the greatest horror movies of all time. Here's Dervish and They Can't Stop the Spring.
The curtain has been raised. One no longer stands. The curtain.
can't let you put this in the bin for the simple reason that it would be a bit like sticking two fingers up at Enya or Clannad. And when we think of the great horror shows of Irish entries in Eurovision, a turkey, not the country, but the bird from the following year, hello, Dustin. Look, I'll grant you, this is not well sung, it's not well performed, but when you see those instruments on the stage, when you hear that sound, it reminds me of my best Irish holidays in County Galway. And for that reason alone, I'm afraid you can't have it.
Do you know what? I will backtrack and say that there are worst Irish songs. So, I agree with you.
Oh, right. So you've gone off into the corner with your tail between your legs.
And I echo that sentiment. Like, I'm not saying this is amazing or anything. To me, it's mid, but it has a lot of elements which are representative of Irish culture. Even the fact that it's a bit amateurish, it just feels like they're in the pub doing their thing, which is very Irish. Then maybe not doing it that well, but I don't think it's bad enough to like banish it into another realm.
Do you want to hear it again?
No, I do not. No, I do not. But no. There are a lot of things I don't want to hear again, including your opinions. No. No.
It's not an option to put one of the fellow presenters into room 101.
But if it was.
Yes, you're in room 101, not better.
Yeah, you'd be in room 101. Sorry.
Nice.
But I agree. I cannot put this in room 101. I'm sorry.
No.
Fair enough.
So listen, as we move on to Juan, I've just got one question in my mind. Which woman with the dark hair and a pink dress is he going to choose next?
I wonder.
So it's me now.
That was my cue.
Yes, it is.
To you, say it's your turn.
Sorry if it was complicated.
Ready. Well, it's not a woman. But he's trying to sound like one. So I'm talking about
Conchita.
Krasimir Avramov, Illusion, Bulgaria 2009. And in my little categories, I have this as worst live vocal performances ever, even including Josh Dubovny. I was actually going to pick Josh Dubovny, and when you picked it, I had this instead. But on review, this is a much higher fall from grace, because I love the studio version of this, but the difference with the live version is hilariously massive. The live performance is just a spectacular miss. In terms of the singing, a bunch of cats fighting and wailing in pain is kind of a cliche to say. But in this case, it's an actually pretty accurate description. They're all standing there in ridiculous outfits, looking like, you know, an amateur theater panto group, literally just shouting at each other. Subtlety is not an option, but hitting the notes is definitely optional. You think it's bad, and then it gets progressively worse. So much worse. It's too much of a coincidence to have so many disastrous vocal performances at once and in the same entry. So I'm wondering, like, did they maybe have too much to drink or something like that before the show? Because something went really, really wrong. And behind this absolute mess, for no reason at all, you have two dancers on stilts just completely doing their own thing, doing some choreo and like randomly just throwing each other around, completely unhinged, absolute carnage. It's so bad, it's almost iconic, it's almost good, and it's almost a shame that you actually cannot see the visuals to accompany these horrible vocals. Can I recommend, I don't know, if you want to suffer a little bit or have a laugh, look at the live. A chaotic vocal mess that is actually hard to do justice in words, and I actually, in a way, kind of find it kind of fabulous.
And what's it called again?
It is called Illusion by Krasimir Avramov.
I can't wait.
Give me your time. Show me your mind.
It feels so wrong to be a part from afar. Your lips could solve it for me. You just
don't know how, you don't know where to go, to go.
Guys, I've had this suddenly brainwave. Now I see where Josh Dubovy got the inspiration from for his singing in 2010. He got it from Bulgaria 2009.
Oh, my God, it's given me a chest infection. Moisture left in my body after that. Okay, so the thing is, I've watched that so many times. And like I said, you need bad songs in Eurovision, a bit of good song sound. Yeah. Good. That shit. But it's not just shit, it's top quality shit.
I agree.
And you know the little sort of whipped thing on top of the poo? That is what it is. It's a cherry on the cake. And as far as I'm concerned, it's entertaining. You know, it brings me hope.
I see that. that you can be in the Eurovision too.
It makes me laugh. Dark clouds blow away. And for that reason, I can't throw that in room 101 because it gives me so much joy and pleasure.
I see that, yes.
The thing is, we have to get some definitional consensus here. If something goes into room 101, does that mean we can never hear it and play it and see it again?
This is the thing, yes.
Oh, that's the thing, yeah.
Yeah, because I wouldn't want to lose that.
No, me neither. I'm just saying, like, yeah, I don't know what room 101 means because I didn't even know what it was.
Because you weren't paying attention, basically.
It's your space of nightmares and horrors.
No, I mean, this is a nightmare and a horror.
That is Carry On Bulgaria. Yeah. Carry On Sofia. So I'm not throwing that in the room. Okay. And dear listeners, take Juan's advice. I mean, you know, we're a radio program, but you need to go onto YouTube and put in Bulgaria 2009 Eurovision, and you will never have a more entertaining 3 minutes.
A classic.
I'm glad it's in this show, but it's not going in room 101.
Lovely.
Right, darling, Mark, who's your next one?
Well, I'm left with Sweden,
yes.
And I've got two Swedish suggestions coming up. I'm going to go...
But you're popular.
...with Sweden 1984. You see, two of my Room 101 entries are winning songs. And in 1984, a song singing first, there was a pattern here, Dinga Dong, 75, Brotherhood of Man, 76, The Harries, 84. It was very
Hooray's.
Fashionable. Hooray's, sorry. I bow to the Swedish amongst
expert.
Us. Yeah, yeah. The reason this song has to be in Room 101 is not because it's just a pile of superficial nonsense and never deserved to win in a million years, but 1984, as all of us agree, had at least three gilt-edged, golden, beautiful songs that would have been worthy winners. And this one won and shut out Italy, Portugal and the Netherlands from winning the crown. And for that reason alone, they deserve to be in Room 101. It's called Digilu Digile. It's from the Herreys, and it's Sweden, 1984, and Don't Enjoy.
Don't Enjoy. You know what? I have never recovered, to be honest, and I still refuse to believe that that song won. It's just not on my radar. I've managed to blank it out, and I've had to be honest, for my own mental health. I mean, I was on the verge of being sectioned. Up till 1984, I could make a case for all of those winning songs, maybe not Ding a Dong, whether they were my favourites or not, but that all changed in 1984. I was 19 years old, and the very virginal me learned a very, very valuable lesson that life can be very cruel and very shit. And how Sweden can celebrate that proudly, that victory on the back of ABBA's Waterloo, the greatest Swedish song of all time 10 years before, you cannot put those two songs on the same piece of paper. It's just shameful. And unlike the aforementioned La that we spoke of a short while ago, neither the Digilu nor the Digile have ever, ever, ever been reproduced in any other song since, either in Eurovision or in the real world. And if I ever see anybody wearing golden boots, I push them into the middle of the road. It's the best place for them.
So I'm so split over this song because, you know, I completely agree. It is an unforgivable travesty that this won over other entries, especially given that Franco Battiato and Alice were in this year's contest. I will never forgive them for that. You know, and at the time they were super Christian. I believe they were Mormons, actually. You know, that's why they're so like blonde and clean cut, and it is kind of vomit inducing. However, the song in Swedish is kind of about, you know, their golden shoes, but you know, that's actually about like finding a certain quality in yourself that makes you feel okay about yourself, and suddenly the whole world is smiling at you. And of course, that resonates with the queer community, right? So it's very, and in Sweden, it's like a classic. It is an absolute classic that people sing everywhere, like a stupid song that just makes everyone happy. It, and I grew up with it. It's very difficult for me to hate it.
But basically what you're saying is that for some people, it gave them permission to be gay, but because they were Mormons, they opted for another three-letter word beginning with G, which, which rhymes with sod.
Yes, yes, basically.
But it's still going in the bin, isn't it?
Yes.
Right, next up, it's my third attempt. Back to the UK, I could have picked Gemini's Crybaby from 2003 as a reminder of the days when the BBC didn't give a shit about who sings for the UK. But then I realised that those days are actually ongoing to the present, and there can't possibly be ever any more of a failure than James Newman in 2021, who scored no points from both the jury and the phone vote, a record-breaking, practically impossible feat from a voting system specifically designed to make sure that no one could absolutely ever get no points whatsoever. Now, sadly for James Newman, the 2020 contest was cancelled, so he was given a second chance, bless him, and returned the following year to perform for the UK. In other words, he had one full year of uninterrupted social distancing and solitude to sit down and focus on composing a winning entry for the UK, which magnifies the pitiful shame of his double 0 points, and in a year when the winning entry scored a massive 540 points. Now, kudos to him for accepting the universal loathing of his performance like a trooper and egging the masses on in the green room. It's got no place in society or modern culture. Another dose of humiliation upon our great nation. Endlessly forgettable, an excruciating reminder why the BBC should no longer be in charge of selecting our entries. In fact, the only thing I truly admire about the UK is that we continually sing in our own language every year. This is James Newman and Embers. Enjoy.
Sometimes I know my fire burns low, but as long as you're with me, I'll never get cold. Day and night, through darkness and light, I never worry when you're by my side. All feelings change and seasons fade, but nothing will burn us out. Nothing can stop us now. We're cool.
out of the embers. You and I are gonna light up the room.
Goodness me, the image that comes to mind when I hear that are those two static, enormous trumpets in the middle of the stage. Mm-hmm. And when they were first revealed, I think, to be honest, the poverty of the song, as bad as the song is in itself, was the absolute gross lack of imagination of the UK production team, who put this admittedly rather overweight man in a very ill-fitting black jacket, leather jacket, between these two static, unmoving trumpets in a world where you have LED screens, stages that do amazing things, that revolve and twist and turn and do amazing things with lights and everything in the UK, but two trumpets and put this blob between them, and he sang for 3 minutes. Even if the song had been really good, the visuals would have just been an absolute crucifixion. But the combination of the inadequacy of the song and the visual poverty was a total mess. Yes. Gets my vote into room 101.
Yes. I mean, I would agree. But the thing is, there are just so many UK entries you could pick for this list. The song isn't the worst in the world, but it isn't great by any means. He just isn't a mover at all. Like, he's not the right artist at all. He looks so uncomfortable. The staging is dire. And let me just, it makes me think, the BBC, I guess, is a traditionalist, kind of conservative institution in a way. And modern pop sensibilities combined with that, they just do not gel. And I think that is kind of the problem. I'm beyond the point of like blaming the artist. It just can't be that year after year, all the artists suck. It just can't be.
They got it right with Sam Ryder the next year.
But that was him. He made that happen.
But do you think he was the person responsible for the staging and the concept? And it seemed that somehow off the back of Embers, the next year they went, we can't afford to do this again.
I'm wondering if Sam Ryder had good contacts and good people and brought in some of his own...
And kept the BBC at bay.
A little bit, yeah. No. Or at least, you know, he brought in some people to collaborate.
Can you remember how amazing it was when Sam Ryder kept getting points? There's a whole generation of British people out there who've never seen the UK do well at Eurovision until Sam Ryder came around.
Et finalement, les 12 points sont attribués à le Royaume-Uni. From France, 12 points! Mon Dieu, sacre bleu!
Right, Juan, your last choice.
Oh my God, it's me again. So my next entry, I mean, it is kind of controversial, but like I said before, I picked my entries because of a certain aspect of the song, like in a certain category. And for me, this song that I'm about to present is the biggest Eurovision anticlimax ever. And I am talking about Francesco Gabani, Occidentali's Karma. Of course, this song is nowhere near being shit or anything like that. It is a really good song with excellent lyrics. For a long time, it was the massive favorite to win. But it was more than just a favorite. I remember it being like really, really beloved by a very large part of the Eurovision community. So much so that it was contagious. Like, it wasn't one of my favorites, but I started to think it was going to win as well and was really looking forward to it being one of the highlights of the night, with the up-tempo, energetic vibe of the song, with the gorilla and with the callback to the audience. I thought it was going to be such a great Eurovision moment. But as the live performance was happening, I just felt my enthusiasm just drain from my body. It felt so underdeveloped and complacent, like they hadn't given too much thought at all about how to transfer the entry from Sanremo to the Eurovision stage, and were just expecting to show up and be handed the win. I just didn't like that kind of attitude it was giving. And that is probably the biggest disappointment. It wasn't a technical issue or that they took a massive risk that just didn't pay off. They just didn't really show up. And it was very obvious. Considering how enthusiastic the fan base was, this might be the biggest anticlimax in Eurovision history. Even though the performance wasn't like that bad, It's just that the core material deserved so much better.
Mm. Introduce it then.
Here we go. Francesco Gabani, Occidentalis Karma. Enjoy.
Essere o dover essere, il dubbio amletico, contemporaneo come l'uomo del neolitico, l'intelligenza è demode, risposte facili, dilemmi inutili. Cercasi, storie dal gran finale, sperasi, comunque vada pantarei. Si distrae, cadono gli uomini, occidentali scarma. Occidentali scarma, la scimmia si rialza. Namaste.
I remember reviewing this in 2017 with our beloved, dearly departed Daniel Gould. And I remember we sat there a month, 5 weeks before the competition, and there wasn't a hair's breadth between us in terms of our consensus. This was pre-Juan.
No, 2017 was my first show.
But were you on the preview for this?
Yes, that was my first show.
Did you think this was going to win?
What I said, I thought it was sleazy. I'm not crazy about the song, but because everyone else thought so, I saw the light and I thought this was a good quality entry and I thought this was going to win, but mainly because of my influence.
Right. Well, Daniel also, you know, and Daniel's judgment was pretty spot on normally. Daniel just had this as a cast iron winner. None of us saw Salvador.
I said it was one of my favourite Eurovision entries of all time.
Yeah. I mean, none of us saw Salvador coming up on the edge of the race to actually capture the winning position. Two problems with this. First of all, big lesson, peaking too early. It got so much exposure in February, March, and all the people who kind of loved it got a bit tired of it by May, I thought. And secondly, how you shoot this, how you direct it, how you visualise it, it was all very slack. It was all big, wide angles. We didn't have the intensity of him and the song itself. So it all felt a bit flabby and lacking in concentration. It was a bit diluted somehow.
Complacent.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there are morals in the story. It came sixth?
Sixth, I think.
Yeah. So But I can't put this in the bin, Juan. I take your point about disappointment, and that's the reason why you've chosen it. But it's I love the song.
It happens many times when you see the video to a song and you get so excited about it. It's happened like Cha 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 with Carrier, great video, Baby Lasagna this year. But with this particular song, the video was so fantastic. I've listened to the song hundreds of times. I was convinced it was going to win. And the second it came on stage, it's like, something's not right. I couldn't put my finger on it. The stage was dark. The backing singers didn't seem to gel. The gorilla looked cheap and tacky, and the whole thing just fell apart instantly. So I understand the disappointment massively. And to be honest, after Eurovision, I couldn't listen to the song for a long time. You know, and that's not the only example. It's happened many, many times over the years. You get so excited to hear the song live on the night, and then you hear it on the night. It's like, oh my god, I can't listen to that song ever again. I can't put that into Eurovision, into the Room 101 bin. I love it so much, but I would put the disappointment into Room 101.
Moving on to my next choice. Sorry, Swedes, it's Sweden again.
Yay!
Now, in 2011, I was in Madrid. I was living out there for a year and a half. And I hosted a Madrid-based Eurovision party, which for my Spanish tutor, the wonderful Blanca González, she was just amazed that a Brit would show so much passion to invite 20 people around for Eurovision party. And let's face it, 2011 was a pretty bad year.
Oh, my God, yeah.
But that this song coming up next, the fact that this could finish third, Eric Sade's popular, I mean, the lyrics, I will be popular, I will be popular, my body wants you, girl. He stomped around that stage with less practical awareness than Garbani's gorilla. I'm sorry, I don't know why the visceral hate for this song. I don't know where it comes from.
Oh, I know.
But it triggers off something inside me so visceral, so deep down that I don't even know what it is. Is it a kind of macho sort of smugness? Is it a repetitiveness? Is it Sweden's kind of like pre-euphoria, kind of we're going to win every year sort of arrogance? I don't know. Maybe there's a lot of prejudices in those comments. But I just hate this song. I really, really hate it. In fact, of the four I've chosen, it's the one I hate the most. It's worse than Joss de Bovy.
It's worse than Diggy-Loo Diggy-Lay.
Yeah, it is, actually.
Bring it on.
You will one day, I can say you will.
Oh, my body won't shoot.
You love it, don't you?
Oh, no, I don't. Sweden have a habit of giving us shit songs with shit lyrics and shit titles, and it infuriates me that they always do well with them. We've got Diggy Diggy Plop Plop, Captured by a Love Storm. I mean, my spell check changed that to Captured by Livestock, which I think is much more exciting. Take Me to Your Heaven, but Popular took it to a whole new level of just crassness. Now, Eric Sade has lovely dimples, and if he's in this room now and he came up to me and asked me to marry him, I would say yes without any hesitation, on the condition that he promises never ever to sing this song while we are lovemaking. Are you listening, babe? I'm putting the song in room 101. I'm putting Eric Sade in a jockstrap.
So, you know, like, this used to be maybe my most hated song in Eurovision of all time.
Spit it out.
One of the most unforgivable things, I think, in artistry, just in general, I mean, from an audience perspective, is when you see a lack of self-awareness, right? The arrogance and the confidence is so misplaced. They really think they are the shit, and they're singing like children's music, you know? And talking about babying your voice, he's definitely babying his voice, but in a different way than Calamira. He's doing it to be more relatable to younger girls, right?
And me.
Yeah, and pedophiles. sorry.
Bless you for that,
you know,
my
darling.
What I
mean? Having said all that, though, I do have a completely different perspective on this today, because my artistic world is turned completely upside down, topsy-turvy. Before the genocide in Gaza, there were so many artists I thought were like really cool, really edgy, outspoken, and I really liked them. I admired their artistry and their courage, most of whom have remained completely silent. Conversely, there are people I really did not respect artistically in the slightest who have been outspoken and standing up for human rights. What is the point of being edgy, anti-commercial, and striving for a different perspective, but when the going gets tough and it's time to stand up to power, that all turns to nothing? Not a word, not a peep. In the Swedish Eurovision sphere, Eric Sade is one of the few to have actually spoken out in support for the people of Palestine, because he is partly descendant from there. And to me, that is worth more than any song or any Eurovision entry, especially in times like these. So I cannot put this in room 101. And actually, to Eric, more power to you, man.
You know, he wore the...
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
So it's up to me now, my last...
Final choice.
Choice, which, it's not a song, actually. It's something much more disturbing and sinister than a song. It's a thing. Well, actually, it's a person. I've got to put Martin Osterdahl out in the trash. The current head of the EBU and the face of Eurovision, as handsome as he is, he needs a firm slap. Well, he thinks he is. But to see where all that came from, we need to go back in time and remember people like the lovely Monsieur Frank Neffs, Francis Stoxelius, Christine Marchal-Ortiz, and Clifford Brown, and all the other scrutineers who lovingly looked after and nurtured our beloved contest. Frank Neff was the most famous of this lot. He scrutinised between 78 and 92. Now, he wasn't the sharpest pencil in the box. He kind of struggled to understand any number that wasn't in French, and he certainly couldn't add up to 12. But that said, you know, he loved Eurovision, and back then Eurovision was simple, it was easy, it was fun, it was innocent, and over the years it's become this big, unruly machine, this beast. And there's so many rules and regulations now, and it's all gone very anal. You can't say anything or do anything without offending somebody. And where's it going to end? It's kind of outgrown its boots somewhat. You're never going to please everybody at the same time. There's always going to be somebody who's going to moan, which leads us to the catastrophe of 2024. Now, I'm a firm believer in ye old English proverb, if it's not broken, don't mend it. But the EBU keep wanting to change and complicate the rules. And now that it is broken, are they going to mend it? Probably not. So we need to blame somebody. Martin Osterdahl is the chosen one. And he got massively booed twice in this year's final. No one ever booed Frank Neff. We laughed at him, but we didn't boo him. So come on, let's chuck him to the lions. I haven't got a song to play. It's just my moaning.
I think what's happened notwithstanding the horrors of what's going on in the Middle East at the moment and how that's brought all this to the fore, there's something else going on in the world, which is the rise of culture wars and identity politics. This wasn't the case 10, 15 years ago. And maybe it was naive of us three to think that somehow Eurovision could be some safe space that wouldn't, you know, it was like a, there was like a wall protecting it, and that the horrors of modernity wouldn't puncture those walls and get through.
That has been the policy, right?
And get through, yeah, yeah. But what's happened in the last couple of years, it's been growing for a while, let's face it. It's not like it suddenly exploded out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But it's like it's like a gathering momentum. Of every year, there have been more and more signs of people getting offended, people playing cards, people playing victims, people saying, oh, no, you can't say this, you can't say that. And it was completely against the spirit of openness of Eurovision. But we thought we were going to get away with it. And it's as though it's been sucked into this kind of vacuum and vortex of modernity. And it leaves me with a very heavy heart, looking forward to 2025 in Bern.
Are you looking forward to it? No, Basel, love. It's Basel.
Sorry, not Bern, Basel, yeah. I wanted it to be Bern, but it was Basel. Actually, I wanted it to be Geneva, but anyway, none of us can afford to go there because it costs 28 euros for half a glass of wine in Switzerland. But I'm torn because I'm not quite on your page, Juan, when it comes to where we're at. There's a sort of naive optimism that I'm thinking that can you somehow still keep singing these songs and turning a blind eye to it and blanking out certain countries and trying to save something? But it's getting harder and harder. But it's so much a core part of my identity, it's just really hard to let go.
So before I start talking about Martin Österlund and all that stuff, just to quickly echo your sentiment as a Eurovision fan, I was hoping that too. Like, the idea of the Eurovision is to have an isolated bubble where you can have, like, share something, because commonality is the route to unity.
It's like Jodie Foster's Panic Room.
Yeah.
It's the place where you can't get in on the walls and then you have a code and people can't get into
the, you. The thing is, the core thing of that is, like, if the EBU isn't respecting that, how is anyone else going to do that? I mean, that's how I kind of see it. And in terms of Martin Österdahl, like, if I'm trying to be objectively fair to him, this is probably the most difficult period in Eurovision history when it comes to being, like, in charge of their organization. And other than that, he just has a very punchable face. now, unfortunately, this is... I kind of need to say this, and I kind of want to emphasize that I am speaking for only myself and talking about the reasons why I need to be distancing myself from the contest. I'm of course talking about the situation involving Israel. The EBU and, you know, / Eurovision has long had a policy of being non-political, and they could have sidestepped this entire political situation, not including Israel citing security reasons or in any number of ways. Instead, the EBU is bending over backwards in an effort to ensure that Israel has a platform, giving them an opportunity to clean their image in front of an audience of millions. It is beyond ridiculous to pretend that the Eurovision is not political at this point, so I will address it as such. The Eurovision platform is designed to celebrate entries, to unite us, in that you cannot vote against an entry. There is no way to criticize. And the EBU chose to give this kind of platform to a country that is guilty of committing countless war crimes, stands accused of committing genocide in the International Court of Justice, and in my view, is blatantly guilty of that accusation, slaughtering thousands of innocent Palestinian civilians and starving an entire population. And when there are protests against this, the EBU actively silences those voices. That is borderline propaganda, that is not standing for peace, unity, or human rights. It is being a mouthpiece, and it is shameful. As a Eurovision fan, or should I say ex-Eurovision fan, I am beyond disappointed and disillusioned. I am disgusted. And I will not give another second of my time to an organization like this. The Eurovision, for all intents and purposes, unfortunately, is dead to me, at least until things drastically change. And just as a side note, if I have to watch Martin Österdahl vacantly look into the camera and say his stupid catchphrase one more time, I might actually be sick. Okay, so now that
you're
I've
good to go.
So now that I've said that, you know, I am participating in this episode because of my absolute love for Eurobliss and for my fellow podcasters to honor the awesome times we've had together over the last, is it 7 years? It's 7, 8 years?
Yeah.
And to say, you know, goodbye properly, at least for now. You know, Mr. DJ Neil Poix, Mr. Mark Dowd, and also the late, the greatly missed Mr. Daniel Gould. Thank you for sharing this wonderful, massively queer journey with me. I love you guys. I love this insane podcast, and I had an absolute blast with all of you, and I wouldn't change it for anything. It is extremely sad to me that the situation is what it is. But who knows, perhaps in the future when things are better, I can come back crazier and gayer than ever.
That can't happen.
You know, and thank you, dear listener, for tuning in and listening to my bullshit over the years. I can only apologize. Hasta luego and free Palestine.
Okay, so I really understand where you're coming from, Juan. I can't carbon copy and absolutely say I agree with absolutely everything. There's one thing I have a disagreement with, which is, and this is not to excuse what's happened over the last year or so, but the Russia-Israel parallel. People say, oh, people banned Russia from Eurovision because of the invasion of Ukraine. So why haven't they done the same with Israel? Israelis will always talk about October the 7th. They'll always say that they were attacked first and that the Ukrainians didn't invade Russia and therefore it's an inexact parallel. The fact of the matter is, when you have a slogan called United by Music and you juxtapose that with what's happened, all human lives are sacred. But when 1,200 were lost in the events of October the 7th and up to 41,000, according to Palestinian figures, which aren't always agreed by Israeli sources and other sources, but they, given the fact they don't cite figures of their own and therefore and don't allow journalists into Gaza to monitor this, we have a very imperfect situation. It puts us in a very, very difficult position. I can only say that when we had the Eurovision Song Contest in Manchester with people attending, it was a very uncomfortable moment when the Israelis took to the screen to sing.
In Manchester?
Yes. Sorry, it wasn't happening in Manchester, but we had a Eurovision party.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. That was an awkward moment. Some people in the room wanted to turn the sound down. Some people said, no, come on. She's only 20 years old. It's not her fault. She's an artist. Give her a chance. Poor woman. She's been in a bullet, you know, proof hotel for the last 2 weeks and surrounded by security guards. Yeah, I mean, all of these people's, I mean, you know, I even had an argument with friends who said, when I said to her, you know, maybe she's a victim of the situation, this poor woman being thrown into all this. And no, she chose to do it. She participated. It's a ghastly situation. I mean, it seems light years away from boom, bang, a bang, and pop it on a string.
The EBU could have sidestepped this. They could have just gone, nope. And all of this would have been a non-issue.
It was very, very fixable.
Yeah.
They had options. And don't forget, they twice overruled the Israeli entries on the grounds that their lyrics were political. So they could have cited security reasons. They could have said, look, sorry, guys, it's just too dangerous at the moment to all the other countries. And out of respect, there's one country called Israel. There's another 36 or 37 participating. It will be so much easier for them if we don't have to go through all this together. Until all this is resolved, maybe there should be a rule that says if you're at war and there's a big political fraught situation going on, you shouldn't participate. And that might mean losing Ukraine even. As I said, it's a long, long way from diggy-loo, diggy-lay, isn't it, Andy?
I do feel like I've lost a friend somehow. I'm not looking forward to next year. But that's in the future. Let's see what happens. But let's not end on a gloomy note. This is probably the last podcast we'll do for at least a while, let's say till Christmas, until we ply him with enough alcohol to persuade him to do it all over again, which is very easy.
And money, yeah.
So on that note, I hope you've enjoyed our Room 101 choices, and you probably will disagree with us, and that's absolutely fine. That was an absolute blast. That was three bottles of 4 bottles of Prosecco later. Please leave some comments on our Mixcloud or on Spotify. And until next time, whenever that may be, it's Good Friday. It's goodbye from him.
Hi, and we're not signing off with Hurricane by Eden Golan.
And it's goodbye from them.
Au revoir.
And it's goodbye from me. Tati, bye now.
Bye.
Bye.